Hello, my name's Dave Emery. This is Sod 2 of For the Record program number 523, titled Catching Up with Daniel Hopsicker. This is being recorded on August 21st of the year 2005. Once again, it's my pleasure and privilege to present to the audience, once again, Daniel Hopsicker, author of, among other titles, Barry and the Boys and Welcome to Terrorland, Muhammad Atta and the 9/11 Cover-Up, now being released in paperback, and also the master of ceremony, so to speak, of the www.madcowprod.com website. Daniel, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Pleasure, Dave.
Now, one of the things that we were talking about in Side 1 was a quote in a hit piece on you in the Sarasota Herald Tribune, in which Rudy Deckers said, quote, if he had any money, which is odd because he's been able to come up with millions of dollars in cash apparently in the past, but if he had any money, he'd sue you into hell. You have been getting sued by a German named Stephen Verharen, who was one of the German associates of Muhammad Atta. What's happening with Verharen and that lawsuit? And can you, once again, very briefly encapsulate for us Muhammad Atta's German connections in Florida?
Well, I mean, that was like one of the amazing things I discovered down here was that at least a half a dozen of Muhammad Atta's close associates, including people he called brother, were not Arab, but German or Swiss.
Mm-hmm.
That, for example, during a wild 3-day drug-filled weekend down in Key West, two of these German folks flew in specifically to meet with Atta early in 2001. That's pretty amazing. I mean, of course, it's not totally amazing because Atta was in Germany for so many years, but we haven't heard anything about any of this. And one of these individuals, a man named Stephen Verharen, who should not even have been in the United States because we have discovered, had been convicted of smuggling in Hungary. He doesn't know that I know that. Came to the U.S. in 1996 and purchased, of all things, a flight school from another German, Wolfgang Boringer, who was perhaps Atta's closest German associate.
And now these are German, so obviously Muhammad Atta was part of the cell in Hamburg, Germany, but these are people who are associated with Muhammad Atta in Florida.
Right, and according to people that were with them, most specifically Amanda Keller, his erstwhile girlfriend, these are relationships that went back to Germany, that they weren't recent, these are old-time folks.
Very quickly, before I develop something that I wanted to develop at greater length here, there is a researcher into September 11th called Peter Lanz, and he has identified, obviously, someone of profound German extraction, a guy named Dietrich Snell, a former U.S. prosecutor, who, according to Peter Lanz, deliberately, in his opinion anyway, obfuscated the Khalid Sheikh Mohammed link to the first World Trade Center attack when Ramzi Youssef was apprehended and convicted in connection with that. Again, that's what Peter Lanz has claimed. Later, Dietrich Snell became a key member of the Keene Commission, and Dietrich Snell was in charge with investigating the movements of the September 11th hijackers in the year or two leading up to the September 11th attacks. And that would place Herr Snell right on the case of what you've been investigating down there in Florida, and what has obviously been such a matter of such great controversy that it has warranted a considerable cover-up. So that's very interesting. And recently, Dietrich Snell was in Germany as a defense witness and basically was able to contribute testimony alleging that Munir Mutesadeg, just convicted of being part of the September 11th cell in Hamburg, but acquitted of having been involved in planning the attacks. And one of the people who helped to get him acquitted of those charges, he was convicted on others, was none other than Herr Snell, who was in charge with it, quote, investigating, unquote, the very connections you've been investigating there in Florida. And obviously Muhammad Atta had a lot of German connections there. In Welcome to Terrorland, Daniel, now again, just out in paperback, you mentioned that Muhammad Atta was being trafficked around by something called the Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft. Tell us about that briefly, and then I'm gonna do something that comes second nature to me, which is to pontificate a bit about that and some other connections. Tell us about the Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft and Atta.
Well, of course, my investigation was focused in Venice, and I didn't have time or resources, translate money, to track who Atta had been in Germany. But just merely by pulling down the news clips in the major media, that came out after September 11th, I discovered some amazing things. I discovered, for example, that Atta had been recruited while he was in Cairo by a West German couple who were being protected because none of the newspapers in which their names came up were they identified. I mean, they were called a West German couple. So there was something strange there.
Well, you know what else is interesting about that? It just occurred to me. There is no more West Germany. Germany was reunified more than a decade ago. But anyway, go ahead.
And then they were supposedly they were looking for gifted students. Well, Atta was not a gifted student. In fact, he barely graduated from the University of Cairo. He wasn't smart enough to get into graduate school in Cairo. So what are they doing bringing him to Hamburg? So this couple is responsible for who he became. There was also in German newspapers a brief acknowledgement that Atta had received money from the Carl Duisberg Foundation, which I knew nothing about. And the more I looked into that, the more I could see that he had gotten money from them at least for the 7 years he was in Hamburg.
Mm-hmm.
So he was being paid by these people, and when I looked at what that was, it was the Congress Bundestag program that was paying him. Okay, the Congress Bundestag program was being administered by the Carl Duisberg Society, and the Congress Bundestag program is a joint effort of course, the U.S. Congress and the German Bundestag to identify promising foreign students and bring them, into the Western orbit, okay? So at least in 4 of the 7 years that Atta was in Hamburg, your tax money and my tax money was supporting him there.
What I'm going to do, Daniel, is develop the Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft a little bit further. Actually, what the Congress Bundestag program was an extension of that. That's the Carl Duisberg Society, as it's called in the United States. That is an international/American extension of something that actually began in Germany, funded by the German government. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that. But before we do that, a couple of points that I wanted you to develop. We'll just basically touch on. You were interviewed when you wrote in Welcome to Terrorland about the German connections of Mohammed Atta in Florida, not in Hamburg, Germany, but in Florida. You were interviewed by agents of the BKA, the Bundeskriminalamt. That's the German equivalent of the FBI, their federal police force. And when you gave them the names, they said that some of these names were the sons and daughters of prominent German industrialists, correct?
Actually, that information came from, anecdotally, from Amanda Keller. No, they were investigating, and they asked for what I had, and I gave it to them.
Okay.
The information I had showed that some of them were the two brothers were the sons of Munich industrialists. One of them was the son of someone big in aviation, and another one was the son of the head of all things of the Seventh Day Adventist Church in Germany.
Interesting.
But I was not able. Actually, I did go to Germany. I went to Germany to speak at a 9/11 conference, and used that occasion to travel around for 3-4 days with a German writer who's friendly to the truth. And I wasn't able to confirm any of that. So that's single sourced information, but I have no doubt but that it's pretty close to the truth.
Okay, so then the source then was not the BKA, because what I'll do is I'll put a correction.
They never told me anything. They asked what I had that could help them, but they're like the FBI, and they never give you anything.
Okay, so I will correct that then. The source was Amanda Keller, Mohammed Atta's girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were able to confirm that one of these guys was apparently the son of an aviation mogul in the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Germany. That's sort of interesting in and of itself. But one of the things that I wanted to point out here is a little bit... one of the things you've pointed out in a number of occasions is that Tony Blair, shortly after September 11th, discussed Al-Qaeda as being part of a global network.
Yeah, a global network supporting Al-Qaeda. while they were in this country.
Well, there is a very, very interesting thing. What I'm going to do is follow out some of the evidentiary tributaries coming out from the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft, the American branch, apparently both certainly the German branch and possibly the American extension, the CDS, part of the Congress Bundestag program, handling Mohammed Atta in the United States from their website. By the way, first of all, we should talk a little bit. Karl Duisberg himself is a very interesting fellow. He was the general director of Bayer AG. That is the famous pharmaceutical company that developed aspirin. It became part of the key IG Farben chemical company in Germany in lead up to and during World War II. The backbone, basically, not only of German war production, but also of political support for Adolf Hitler. Bayer Company has an interesting history. Bayer developed, in addition to aspirin, heroin, which was originally developed as a cure for morphine addiction and as a cough suppressant, particularly effective for children, which I don't doubt. You know, if little Tyler came up with a cough, give him a little heroin, and he'd be mellow yellow after that, no doubt. Then, in the run-up to World War II, Bayer was asked by Adolf Hitler to develop a synthetic morphine because they were afraid that they would not be able to get enough raw opium due to naval blockades by the Allies to develop morphine to treat casualties. So Bayer developed a synthetic morphine, which they called Dolophine, D-O-L-O-P-H-I-N-E, in honor of Adolf Hitler. After the war, Dolophine continued to be marketed by Bayer and other members of the pharmaceutical cartel, but because of the controversy after the war, they renamed it methadone, and now that's used to treat heroin addiction. Karl Duisberg also was the developer of the forced labor program in World War I, in which Belgian and other nationals were forced. They were relocated into Germany and basically turned into, in effect, slaves. Perhaps most interestingly, Karl Duisberg was the inventor of poison gas in World War I. He called that a higher form of killing when the stalemate on the Western Front due to trench warfare was becoming an increasingly just a raw bleeding wound. Duisberg came up with the idea of taking the phosgene gas, poison gas that was a byproduct of some of IG Farben's, basically of Bayer's chemical processes, and loading it into artillery shells and firing a barrage. And he was, Karl Duisberg, was the godfather of poison gas, basically the first weapon of mass destruction. What I wanted to do here, Daniel, is to read a little bit about the history of the Karl Duisberg Society, which then, that's the American branch of the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft. It says, our history, and this, by the way, will resonate very strongly with members of the listening audience. In the 1920s, Karl Duisberg, general director of Bayer AG in Germany, envisioned sending German students to the United States on work-study programs. Duisberg was convinced that international practical training was critical to the growth of German industry. Many of the returning trainees later rose to prominent positions at AEG, that's German General Electric, Bayer, Bosch, Daimler-Benz, and Siemens, bringing with them new methods for mass production, new ideas, and new business practices. Following World War II, alumni from the first exchanges founded the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft, or CDG, in 1949 to help engineers, businessmen, and farmers gain international work experience necessary for the rebuilding of Germany. And then goes on to describe the expansion in 1968 of this to become the Karl Duisberg Society and so forth. It's now part of a global network, and among the principal corporate sponsors, the Bayer Corporation, Lufthansa, German Airlines, AESU. By the way, interestingly enough, too, Bayer has an interesting connection with the events in and around 9/11. In the summer of 2001, Bayer was looking to sell its pharmaceuticals division. This was in the context of some of the go-go globalized corporate maneuvering that was taking place at that time. But unfortunately, in the summer of 2001, Bayer's pharmaceutical division stock was heavily depressed because they had been marketing a blood pressure medicine, which apparently had proved fatal to a number of the people who had taken it. And so their stock was way, way down when they wanted to basically divest of the pharmaceuticals division. But there was a fortuitous thing that happened shortly after that because of the anthrax attacks. Cipro, which is manufactured by Bayer's pharmaceutical division, suddenly became in tremendous demand, and because of that, there was a huge rise in the stock of Bayer Pharmaceuticals, which then facilitated attempts to divest of the pharmaceutical division. That also fits in with some of the short-selling and apparent profit-taking that took place, speculating on airline and insurance stocks, among other things. Something fairly well documented by September 11th researchers, but looking into here are the directors of the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft that was trafficking around Mohammed Atta. Again, from the board of directors of the Karl Duisberg Society, their website, Gerd D. Mueller, retired, note a member of the Bundestag on the CSU ticket, chairman of the board of Bayer Corporation, Dr. Hans W. Decker, treasurer of the board, a professor of Columbia University. Robert Fenstermacher, executive director, CDS International. Carl Gierken, G-W-E-R-C-K-E-N, a partner in Alston and Bird, LLP. I'm not familiar with that. Dr. Olaf J. Groth, G-R-O-T-H, executive director, strategic analysis and integration for Boeing International Corporation. Dr. H. Friedrich Holtzapfel, the managing director of the Burlington Group, Dr. Gudrun Kockendorfer-Lucius, managing director of IWENT, Capacity Building, International Germany, Fritz E. Kropracek, managing director of Deutsche Bank AG. Deutsche Bank appears to have been a vehicle for much of the profit-taking in connection with September 11th. More here, Wolfgang Linz, retired executive director of CDS International, Dr. Carl M. Mayer-Wittmann, president of WEFA Incorporated. Francis McCaffrey, first American name we've seen here, manager center development, BMW of North America. Dr. Horst K. Salbach, vice chairman of the board, Festo Corporation. And Dr. Norbert Schneider, chief executive officer of the Karl Duisberg Centrum GmbH. So whether or not that has anything to do with the allegations of Amanda Keller about the propitious lineage of some of Mohammed Atta's German associates remains to be seen. But now, here's where we start getting into the global network. Now, on the Karl Duisberg Society website, there is another related program called Alpha Fellowship Program. And this relates to the Alpha, the Crown Alpha Group in Russia. Alpha is a major Russian oil company with, again, more connections and a switchboard. And they have, and under the auspices of the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft, or Karl Duisberg Society, they have an Alpha Fellowship Program for Russians to come to the United States, and this is associated with the Alpha Company. Now, that is an interesting company, too. What we're going to look at here is a report from the Public Eye from August 2nd of 2000, Dateline, Washington. Listen to where this Alpha Company, again, which has a fellowship sponsored under the auspices, apparently, of CDS, who is trafficking around Mohammed Atta. Reading now from the Public Eye of August 2nd, 2000. Under the guidance of Richard Cheney, a get-the-government-out-of-my-face conservative, Halberton Company over the past 5 years has emerged as a corporate welfare hog, benefiting from at least $3.8 billion in federal contracts and taxpayer-insured loans. Check this out, Daniel. One of these loans was approved in April by the U.S. Export-Import Bank. It guaranteed $489 million in credits to a Russian oil company whose roots are embedded in a legacy of KGB and Communist Party corruption, as well as drug trafficking and organized crime funds, according to Russian and U.S. sources and documents. Those claims are hotly disputed by the Russian oil firm's holding company. Halberton, which lobbied for the Ex-Im loan after the State Department initially asserted that the deal would run counter to the, quote, national interest, unquote, will receive $292 million of those funds to refurbish a massive Siberian oil field owned by the Russian company, the Tyumen Oil Company, which is controlled by a conglomerate called the Alpha Group, okay, which has a fellowship program under the auspices of CDS. Skipping down here. This gets very, very interesting indeed. First of all, about the Alpha Group here, and I'm editing just a bit here as we go, about some documentation about Alpha. That document and the FSB, that's the Russian Intelligence Service, the successor to the KGB, that document and the FSB report claimed that Alpha Bank, one of Russia's largest and most profitable, as well as Alpha Eco, a trading company, again, this is associated with the Alpha conglomerate, had been deeply involved in the early 1990s in laundering of Russian and Colombian drug money and in trafficking drugs from the Far East to Europe. The former KGB major, who with the fall of communism in the late 1980s had himself been involved in the plan by the KGB and Communist Party to loot state enterprises, said that Alpha Bank was founded with party and KGB funds and quickly attracted rogue agents who had served in anti-organized crime units. Quote, they, the rogue agents on the bank's payroll, quickly determined that dealing in drugs would bring the highest profits with literally no risk in Russia, according to the former KGB officer. He claimed that a, quote, large channel of heroin transit was established from Burma through Laos, Vietnam, to the Far East, Siberia, unquote. From there, the drugs were camouflaged as flour and sugar shipments and forwarded on to Germany. The drug operation was controlled by a Chechen mob family, he said. Of course, Chechnya is now a focal point of a lot of Islamic fundamentalist guerrilla activity. More about this network, and again, this overlaps the Carl Duisberg Society. The FSB document claims that by the end of 1993, a top Alpha official met with Gilberto Rodriguez Orihuela, O-R-E-J-U-E-L-A, the now-imprisoned financial mastermind of Colombia's notorious Cali cartel, quote, to conclude an agreement about the transfer of money into Alpha Bank from offshore zones such as the Bahamas, Gibraltar, and others. The plan was to insert it back into the Russian economy through the purchase of stock in Russian companies, unquote. The account from the former KGB officer is unclear about Alpha's alleged role with Rodriguez, but apparently confirms that, quote, in 1993 and 4, there were attempts of the so-called chess player, Rodriguez's nickname, to launder and legalize large amounts of criminal money in Russia. He reported that there was evidence, quote, regarding Alpha Bank's involvement with the money laundering of Latin American drug cartels. Now, this is the group for which Cheney's Halliburton Oil was getting an export-import bank loan. Still more about Tyumen Oil, that is a subsidiary of Alpha. Tyumen could have significant access to the White House should the Bush-Cheney ticket win in the November presidential elections. Tyumen's lead attorney at Akin Gump is James C. Langdon Jr., a managing partner at the firm. He is also one of George W. Bush's pioneers, one of the elite fundraisers who have brought in at least $100,000 for the Republican presidential hopeful. So how do you like those apples there, Daniel? A lot of interesting connections. This is the same network we're talking about, this global network. Still more from Forbes magazine. I realize I'm going quickly, but we got time limitations. From Forbes magazine of November 15th of 04, basically the Crown Alpha Group, this same entity, was involved with the funky oil for food deals that are now the focal point of UN investigations and others. Again, by Michael Maiello from Forbes magazine, about the Rondo, as they call it. One, Alpha buys 1 million barrels of cheap Iraqi oil in Ceyhan, Turkey at $25 a barrel. Step two, Alpha sells the oil to its subsidiary, Crown Trade and Finance, for $25.59. Step three, Crown, that's part of Alpha, sells the oil to ExxonMobil for $27.78 at an 11% profit. The hard-to-trace proceeds now reside in Gibraltar, a secretive tax haven. And still more about some of the tributaries coming out of this network, skipping down in the Forbes article. One of the companies involved with this Alpha Crown Rondo, as they say, and again, this company got a whole bunch of, got millions of dollars secured courtesy of the pressure of Dick Cheney's Halliburton Oil. That is a company, a Houston-based company called Bay Oil. A favorite Rondo cost customer and at a point of entry to the U.S. market was a Houston company, Bay Oil. And skipping down, during the 1980s Iran-Iraq war, Bay Oil apparently got a fee of $2 a barrel for brokering 20 million barrels of Iraqi oil to the Chilean arms dealer Carlos Carduin, as recounted in Forbes of January 30th, 1995. Now, Carlos Carduin is a name that will ring very familiar to those students of 1980s covert operations. He was one of the principals in the Iraqgate scandal, overseen, like Iran-Contra, by the elder George Bush, securing American arms for Saddam Hussein, just as we were selling arms to the Iranians during that war. So again, Daniel, I know that's a lot to digest at one sitting, but those are some of the tributaries of this global network coming out from the Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft, or Carl Duisberg Society, that was trafficking around Mohammed Atta. What do you think of that, Daniel, in 25 words or less?
Two things. Number one, you could hardly get people to believe that, or most people to believe that. And number two, we can't even put uniforms on the players yet. We can't even tell who really attacked us and why. And that, I mean, you know, from the litany you've just recited, you know, clearly, whatever happened was enmeshed way deep in global geopolitical, you know, gangland style stuff,
as well as major power politics. What you call in Welcome to Terrorland, elite deviants, or perhaps we could call them alpha males under the circumstances. You know, very quickly, Daniel. Speaking of networks. One of the things we spoke about in our last interview, For the Record 516, was Jack Abramoff and the Sun Cruise gambling boats, one of which was visited by Mohammed Atta and company a few days before September 11th, quite possibly to launder some money. Now Jack Abramoff has been indicted, and Abramoff, Sun Cruise, the late Gus Boulos, murdered on February 6th of 2001, have become focal points of some investigative reporting, at least some. And you have laid the groundwork for that. Encapsulate that briefly for us, Daniel. We've only got another couple of minutes here.
I suppose what it means is this. Somebody had to die before Jack Abramoff became heir to 23 gambling vessels, mm-hmm. Okay, that run around unregulated in Florida. Somebody had to die before that happened, and my information is that when that somebody died, that was part of the same takeover that helped Florida go for George W. Bush in the year 2000.
Mm-hmm. And Rob Tiller, a former associate of Wally Hilliard, partner at these funky flight schools, along with Rudy Deckers, alleged that the late Gus Boulos had been an associate of the elder George Bush.
Yeah, I think it was he was indicating that he worked for George W. Bush Sr. I think that was the information I was getting, and in fact, the way he said it was he was commenting on how many employees, however loosely you want to use that term, of the Bush organization ended up dead. He said he referenced the guy that made the cigarette boats, who was also a close associate of George Bush Sr.
Don Aronow,
who was yep. murdered 15 years ago, and he was just kind of bemoaning the fact that working for interests associated with the Bush family is not necessarily a guarantee of longevity.
Daniel, we are out of time here. If the listeners, if their appetite for more information has been whetted by what they've heard here, and hopefully it is, I want to refer them, first of all, to Daniel's website, www.madcowprod.com. Articles, videos, a wealth of information, and also Daniel books, Barry and the Boys. And by the way, one of the points I want to make is that Barry and the Boys in many ways leads into Welcome to Terrorland. Now, Welcome to Terrorland is available in paperback, and they can order that from your website, correct?
Yes, they can. They can order everything we have from the website.
Alrighty. Or they could perhaps place an order through a bookstore. As they used to say in those old commercials, wherever fine books are sold. And and get them to order one.
When you come to the website and order for me, we make more money.
All righty. Well, then go to the website and help Daniel out down there, shedding light on this global intrigue, which touched down in Florida and later in New York and Washington with results that are altogether devastating and apparently ongoing. Also, don't overlook www.spitfirelist.com, a wealth of printed information, books, a search function, links to a number of sites maintained by the heroic sister station WFMU, including all of my interviews with Daniel Hopsicker, and a page to click on to support the work that I'm doing as well. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 523, catching up with Daniel Hopsicker, being recorded on August 21st of 2005. My name's Dave Emery. For Daniel Hopsicker, thanks for listening.